For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Surpass profound and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain.
We're in the middle of our spring practice commitment period, in which we are, in addition to doing some extra sitting, extra meetings with our teacher, meetings with each other, we are focusing on readings of 4 chapters from the Lotus Sutra. And I was thinking about what to talk about when I learned Friday that Zenke Blanche Hartman had passed away early Friday morning. And I wanted to see what light, if any, the Lotus Sutra might throw upon that. Blanche's life was interesting. She was born in 1926, and she and her husband Lou became interested in Zen only in the 1960s, when they were in their 40s. They first started practicing with Mel Weitzman at the Berkeley Zen Center, and Blanche eventually received transmission from Mel. But she spent most of her life from that time as a long-term resident at all 3 practice places for San Francisco Zen Center, so City Center, Green Gulch, and Tassajara Zen Monastery. And she became co-abbess of Zen Center from 1996 to 2002. She was the first woman to take on that position, and she decided to do it in order to provide a model for other women who were practicing at Zen Center. She left 7 Dharma heirs, and she wrote a very good book, Seeds for a Boundless Life, which came out this past year. It's brief essays and transcripts of Dharma talks that she gave for the most part, and they're very good. I recommend it, especially because I think, not having known Blanche, I think you get a taste of her personality. The essays and Dharma talks are very straight from the shoulder and no nonsense. You know, really just very good discussions of what Zen practice is about. Our practice is to help people. So she avoids abstraction in a way that I think is very important. But beyond that, there are other ways to teach. She studied the practice of sewing Buddha's robes and became the head teacher for the sewing teachers throughout Zen Center and affiliated groups. So our own resident sewing teacher, Hogetsu, spent a good bit of time with Blanche. And so most of the people here who are wearing okesa or rakusu are either sewing students of Blanche's or of a student of Blanche's. Some people here have spent a bit of time with their Taigen. Blanche was Taigen's Shuso teacher. And as I said, Hokatsu spent a good bit of time with her. So I was wondering, how do we make sense of Blanche's passing, or as Gene Reeves would say in his translation of the Lotus Sutra, her extinction, or the Japanese might say, how of her becoming Buddha. And I thought I would at least pose the question in a way that we find in the 55th case from the Blue Cliff Record. It's called Dawu's Condolence Call. In the case is Dawu and Chen Yuan went to a house to make a condolence call. Yuan hit the coffin and said, "Alive or dead?" Wu said, "I won't say alive, and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" Wu said, "I won't say." Halfway back, as they were returning, Yuan said, "Tell me right away, teacher. If you don't tell me, I'll hit you." Wu said, "You may hit me, but I won't say." Yuan then hit him. Later, Dawu passed on. Yuan went to Shi Shuang and brought up the foregoing story, and Shuang said, "I won't say alive, and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" And Shuang said, "I won't say. I won't say." At these words, Yuan had an insight. One day, Yuan took a hoe into the teaching hall and crossed back and forth from east to west and west to east. Shuang said, "What are you doing?" And Yuan said, "I'm looking for relics of our late master." Shuang said, "Vast waves spread far and wide, foaming billows fled the skies. What relics of our late master are you looking for?" Yuan said, "This is just where I should apply effort." And Fu of Taiguan, one of the commentators later, said, "The late master's relics are still present." So I wanted to raise this question. What does it mean that she's passed away and become Buddha? And that was a topic, surprisingly, in Seeds for a Boundless Life that's a frequent topic in Blanche's Dharma talks. You know, for her, birth and death really are the great matter in Zen. And you can tell as well that she needed to work with the matter a good bit with the death of her husband, Lou Hartman. So the Lotus Sutra throws some light on the question of is she alive or is she dead? Now, we've been focusing mostly on three chapters from the section of the Lotus Sutra that are called the Assembly in the Air, which are the most dramatic and strange. In the first 11 chapters, Shakyamuni Buddha is given a sermon in which he gives miraculous news to everyone, a huge, inconceivably large assembly on Vulture Peak Mountain, that all of them and anyone else who engages even slightly with Buddha Dharma will become Buddhas dedicated to the awakening of other beings. And after he finishes giving that message, suddenly from out of the ground springs a gigantic stupa containing the body of abundant treasures, a Buddha who died millions of billions of trillions of eons ago. But on the Buddha's preaching the words of the Lotus Sutra, he's become reanimated and his stupa has appeared so that he can listen to the Buddha preach the Lotus Sutra. And things only get stranger from there. The Buddha summons other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas from worlds throughout the universe who are, they're different translations, his embodiments or his emanations, or I think we could say his expressions, or their other versions of Shakyamuni. And I think there's a pretty good suggestion that the Buddhas are all versions of each other, expressions of each other. And this entire gigantic assembly rises up into the air, and Shakyamuni Buddha sits on a seat next to abundant treasures, the reanimated Buddha. Shakyamuni speaks some more, and he makes it clear that his life will not last much longer. He's about 75 years old. When he does that, then he explains that when he is extinguished, his death or his passing away will be a skillful means to bring others to practice when they wouldn't, because they'd feel like they could coast if there's a Buddha around, and they could just listen to the Dharma and not practice themselves. And Shakyamuni explains that notwithstanding the fact that he was born about 75 years before, and he became awakened about 40 years before that, he's really been awakened for zillions and trillions and gazillions of eons long ago, and he's been teaching during all that time. And after he dies, this time he will continue to teach, although people may not be able to see him. And you go, well, what is that about? But he does drop some hints about what's going on. I mean, he's summoned these other, he's already the equivalent, he's expressed his equivalence with abundant treasures by joining him up in the stupa with the reanimated Buddha, who's become revived and reanimated through the preaching of the Lotus Sutra. And then we know that these other Buddhas, these embodiments of Buddha, these versions or expressions of Shakyamuni Buddha, have throughout the cosmos have been preaching the Dharma and the Lotus Sutra, and they have come to Vulture Peak Mountain along with their bodhisattvas, and that these bodhisattvas and the other bodhisattvas on Vulture Peak in the assembly are going to take on the preaching of the Dharma and take on the Buddha's work. They will be the children of the Buddha. And there are other hints of what can happen. He repeatedly says in chapters 11 and 16 that anyone who can embrace, who can receive and embrace the Lotus Sutra after he has died, will embrace the body of the Buddha. And whoever preaches the Lotus Sutra will see abundant treasures, Shakyamuni Buddha, and all the embodiments of the Buddha that have already appeared on Vulture Peak Mountain. Those who do good, who are gentle, let me use his words. Those who do good, who are gentle and honest, will all see me here teaching the Dharma. In order to liberate the living as a skillful means, I appear to enter nirvana. Yet truly, I am not extinct. I am always here preaching the Dharma. So those are hints that are a little more direct than we usually get in the Zen koan literature. Which I will refer to again. What is it? It's case 47 of the Wu Ming Quan. It's called Doshuai's Three Barriers. And the case from there is that the priest Doshuai set up three barriers in order to examine his students. You make your way through the darkness of abandoned grasses in a single-minded search for your self-nature. Now, monks, where is your nature? That's one. The second, when you have realized your self-nature, you are free from birth and death. When the light of your eyes falls, when you are dying, how are you free? And third, when you are free of birth and death, you know where to go. When the four elements of your body scatter to the winds, where do you go? And so I think we have to ask ourselves, we can't say that Blanche Hartman is alive or dead. And we have to ask, where is she now? Where did she go? I think the most direct expression of that is one that our sewing teacher Hogetsu shared with me when we were exchanging emails about Blanche's death, and I said how sorry I was that I had never met her. And her response was, well, are you sure you haven't? Look at your stitches. So, I think I've already said too much. So, if anyone has anything to say, please, let's hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Douglas, for talking about Blanche. Just a little bit. We will have a formal memorial service for her tomorrow evening. She was my Shuso teacher. Actually, I was her first Shuso at Tassajara in the spring of 1990. She was a good friend, and I was very close friends with her husband, Lou. We had a lot in common, although from different generations. Blanche was from Alabama, and her father was a civil rights lawyer in Alabama back in the 60s. She was both. Lou was actually on the refused to testify to the House of American Activities Committee. He was on the blacklist back then. They were both radicals. And Blanche talked about an experience she had when she was demonstrating and looked at the eyes of a policeman right in front of her and realized that she couldn't be this person's enemy. Blanche was really down to earth. She wasn't floating in the air. She was direct. She was warm, but also gritty in a way. So, she had I was surprised that I didn't feel really sad in any way. She had a very full life. She was 90 years old. 90 years and 5 days old, and passed very peacefully with friends around her. To add that, we'll have the service tomorrow evening. And in terms of alive or dead, and that story, this does come up in chapter 16 of the Lotus Sutra, where the Buddha says that even though he's getting ready to pass away, he's been around for a very, very long time, as Douglas said, and continued for twice that long. So what does that mean? Dogen has memorial, it has services on Buddhist Parinirvana Day, which we also honor in February, and talks about how if you say he's, it talks about his mourning. But also, if you say he's dead, you're not a true student of the Buddha. So we live with this there's not a word for it. It's not a paradox. It's not a contradiction. It's just that you can't say alive and you can't say dead. And it mean that Buddha's alive? This is about our practice, your practice, which one of you gave this morning, how are we keeping Buddha alive? Anyway, I'll just throw that in. Other comments, responses to Douglas, reflections, questions, please do.
Perhaps as another version of this, I have an ongoing conversation with a friend of mine. Her father died a few years ago, my mother died a couple of years ago, and she uses the expression when talking about her father. She says, well, my father is dead. And I keep saying to her, I don't understand that. I can't say my mother is dead. What I can say is that my mother died a couple of years ago. Her body died a couple of years ago. She wants to know, well, are you saying that she's living some sort of afterlife, or that she lives on in the memories of those who continue to live? And I said, that isn't it. I have no idea what I mean by what one might think of in terms of afterlife, or whatever. But what I can say is that her body died a couple of years ago. And that's something that happened. And I realized that to say she is dead is identifying her with her physical body completely. And I can't do that.
Well, thanks, Douglas. Yeah, this is one of those, this even adds up your comments, just one of those little strange things. You mentioned that Blanche had seven Dharma parents, one of whom is my sister, Yen. And Yen, when she visited our temple, oddly enough, spoke of that very same koan, alive or dead. And and I think even there is this kind of hint or clue about the way Dharma circulates that makes that question. It has to be a question that, you can't say. I'll just say, I had a chance to meet Sankei very briefly, spent a week with her, with Asian, so, and the life of the Zen Center was going on, and he was cold in this room, and that was the only time I got to know her, and it was right before we spent also.
Blanche's commitment for the last several years of her life was to pass on the practice of sewing Buddha's robe. And I had the great opportunity when I was sewing my Okesa going into city center from Green Gulch to sew mostly with her students, actually. I'd come on Tuesday afternoons and I'd be working with some of her students, Tim Wicks and Christine Palmer especially. And it was just such a nice feeling in that room. It was such generosity and joy, but a real, without diverging from any of the dedication to the practice. And then after dinner, Blanche would come in and there'd be the official sewing class. And it was this warm, loving feeling in the room. And I feel I got to know her sewing teacher a lot through her students, and I could see when she was in there how they were really embodying her practice in every kind of way and in the spirit of it. So I feel that she does live on in this way.
So that was a really lovely talk. And I like the questions. I only know of Blanche through Hogetsu and the sewing. And so with Hogetsu, and the sewing was like one of my favorite practices that I was selling at IFL. So, and Hogetsu really brought Blanche to just, I mean, because that's it, she brought it down, you know, brought it from Blanche and then brought it to us in the sewing tradition. And so we'd hear stories about Blanche, you know, and some of them were on the link that we got, the note we got from Mogetsu about Blanche dying, and some of the little stories about her. But so we'd hear those stories about Blanche, and I thought that that was really important, you know, in learning about someone. Just saying that the keeping her alive that way.
Well, I think it's, for me, it's been interesting over the years to talk to so many people who've visited or lived at Zen Center, how often they had memories of Blanche. And it's something that makes clear that teaching is not just Dharma talks. It's how you live your life with other people. And clearly she meant a lot of people, a lot to a lot of people in that way.
Representing Ancient Dragon at Ranch and Streams at San Francisco Zen Center, which is when affiliate sanghas get together periodically to share. And it was so interesting to see all the people that I had heard about. You know, she was sort of legendary, but there were other legendary people there. But she was so amazing to watch. She wore different okesas, maybe three different ones a day, because her students made her so many. She had all these beautiful okesas, and she would change them. And she made it her business to meet all the people that were visiting. She sought them out at meals and in the hallway and wherever, and introduced herself and found out a little bit about them and made a personal connection with them. She was so delighted when I said I was a student of Taigen and just beamed about that. And I told her I was sewing an okesa with Hoketsu, and she beamed about that. And said, Mazel Tov! Such a lovely thing. I'll never forget. So, yes, thank you. Very heartwarming.
That was mentioned that she was now a Buddha, and I just wanted to say something briefly about the kind of formal thing about death in Japanese Buddhism, which I really like. The Japanese Buddhist priests spend a lot of their time doing memorial services and funerals, and that's why some of the Japanese Buddhist priests who come to America because they wanted to focus on Zazen and Dharma more. Shohaku came. You know, when I was working with him in Japan, he was always doing these memorial services and wanted to spend more time.
I don't think he's done one since.
Yeah. thank you for listening for us. But in Japan, the understanding is that when someone dies, a number of different things happen. The person who dies, it exists on a memorial plaque which goes into a room behind the altar of his home temple. And there are these rooms filled with memorial plaques. Also, there's a memorial plaque on the home altar of the family. Also, there's a grave in the cemetery where the ashes are. Also, after 49 days, this is just like the practice of the death of the dead, the person is reborn. Also, when someone dies, they become automatically a hotoke, which means Buddha. So all those things happen at the same time, which I really like. So that Douglas referring to that.
I'll take it, thanks.
Anyway, so I just wanted to mention that. It's,
thank you.
interesting. We just don't know. Eric, you want to say
something? I just wanted to comment on what Don said. Many of you already know that I've spent much of the past decade with an Amazonian tribe called the Amawaka. And Amawaka, there are fixed beings. So, like for example, my adoptive mother made her labor is expressed and seeps into my body, and we quite literally become one person. This is not understood as a metaphor. And so when Hogetsu told Douglas, like, look at your stitches, it's a little enigmatic for us, or maybe it seems metaphorical, but for some people this is just absolutely normal and quite literal, actually. So every time Hogetsu teaches us to sew a stitch in the Amawaka region, that's Blanche right there.
As far as I know, yeah.
But for those who are, you know, who might not have been aware of that before, would like to look into it. I think for many years, until recently, she participated in a column with two other Buddhist teachers in Buddha Dharma from different traditions, and each month somebody would pose a question, and they would all answer from, you know, the spirit of their own tradition or whatever. So, I know that we have many of those in storage and basement and elsewhere, so if people are curious, they might want to see this time.
There's a magnificent photograph of both the San Francisco Zen Center and the
you could email info@ancientdragonclub.org and maybe you will and put forward to people. There's also in one of the announcements I saw a picture of her as a young woman. I had never seen that before. She's lovely. Always known her as older. Questions, comments, responses on the great matters of life and death, or Blanche, or Bruce Rowe, or Lois, or Trill, or anything else. Okay, we'll close with the four Bodhisattva vows that we chant three times.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I